Somebody just told me that some people bought a little photo of this form. And if you did, it needs to be used with great care and rightly. It's not to be used as the photo of somebody. It only works if, when looking at it, you sense a deeper connectedness and presence with yourself. So you need to know that you are looking at yourself. The light that shines through the form is yourself. The form is completely unimportant. And you recognize it when, as you contemplate the photo, peace arises within. And then it's good to close your eyes or remove the photo so that you don't get attached to the form. Because it's a reflection of yourself. And somehow, that when the unconditioned comes through a form, even on a photo, you can see it. It's still there for some reason. It took me a while before I said yes to that. People could have a photo, because it can so easily be misleading, can be misunderstood. So that is always the case with a teacher. You are drawn to a teacher, and the power of the teaching, which is the emanation, which is more important than the words, and you recognize that. That in you that recognizes it is the same as that which is recognized. Presence, whatever you want to call it. If it were not in you, you wouldn't recognize it. So that there's no attachment to the form. The form serves its purpose when it takes you to the formless, because the formless shines through the form. And then the form has served its purpose. And that's the case also with your body, the person. It doesn't necessarily mean that your life comes to an end as this form, when the formless shines through. But the fulfillment is already there. Then the fulfillment that is already there can manifest further in this world of form. There are two or three questions here that ask, is that really all? Entering the now, and then nothing else happens after that. Is there no further advancement or progression? Is there no further development? Is that the end of all spiritual practice? Is that the end of ever having a spiritual teacher? Well, most likely, yes, it is the end of having a spiritual teacher. Because you are connected with the one teacher, you are that, the self. But it doesn't mean on the level of form the formless cannot express itself and even flow into the forms that then you create or are being created through you. And that evolves through time, because the world of form is connected with time. So it took years for this teaching to evolve out of the initial realization. Many years. The initial realization and the state of peace, that's the same state 25 years ago already. It was there, the state of peace. But nothing had manifested, there was no teaching that hadn't manifested out of that. That took time. And during those 25 years, there were periods of time when I also sat there and said, is that all that I'm meant to do in this world? There's deep peace. Occasionally a person comes to see me. Occasionally tiny little groups, once a month, twice a month. And that was good. But is that all that... And so for years I was sitting there in seclusion, relative isolation, which I had chosen to live in the country. And that would have been fine too. But the totality had other plans. And one morning I woke up with a realization. And the realization was, I need to move to the west coast of North America. Didn't know why. And so I moved. And then later, much later, I realized that I needed to be in that energy field for the book and the teaching to come out of me. And then it unfolded from there. So it's not that everything stops on the phenomenal plane. One could say it all begins, your true life begins when the illusion of the self dissolves, the mind-made little me self. Then their true life begins. And then it unfolds from within. It's not so much me living my life, but life living me, through this form. And the goal of spiritual practice is not the now is the portal. The goal of spiritual practice is the end of the false self, the fading away of the egoic structures. And that is the flowering. And then it flowers and flowers and flowers. So, the fading away of the false self, the dissolving of the false self, I talked about it this morning. Just to encapsulate what I said this morning could be encapsulated by saying that what you can practice as you go through life and even here is not to resist the diminishment of your sense of self. in whatever form it comes, whether somebody insults you or somebody disagrees with you and doubts that your position is the right one, whatever it may be. Any time when your sense of self feels injured, and normally the automatic repair mechanism would come into operation, to be so aware that you simply step back and not resist it, that is contained in many teachings, the diminishment of self is not resisted, and then the need to be right is relinquished, for example, in an argument. You're quite happy not to be right. And then immediately you can sense peace comes up. You haven't died, only the false has now given way. There's an opening, and you can sense immediately an influx of peace. So it's the opposite of death. But I wouldn't tell that to a child. It is the destiny of humans to have to go through the growth of self and then go beyond that. To go through. So a child needs to go through the stage, and it takes years, where the child begins by saying, "My daddy has a bigger car than yours." And, "Oh, this is mine. My toy is nicer than yours. Look at me. I can do it. Look, me. Look, me." So it would be futile to say to a child, "Don't say that. Forget about me. You mustn't talk about yourself. It won't work." So that the child wants attention at that stage is there. And at other times doesn't want attention. But that's already, there's a self-image arising, self-consciousness, and gradually that the mind-mate's meant companion begins to walk next to him. You have the child begins to have a relationship with itself. He's maturing, she's maturing, becoming an adult. And then the suffering begins. Because you're trapped now in that. Your sense of self is trapped in that. And then through the suffering, you go beyond. So it seems that humans so far, at least now, they need to go through that stage. The self, ego structures, and then the suffering. But perhaps now humans can go through this more quickly. So perhaps that the egoic structures can dissolve at a much earlier age. It sometimes happens that self-realization of the unconditioned emerges. There's another question concerning that here. I may come to it, or we talk about it anyway. It can sometimes happen that the unconditioned emerges through a form that is not yet, where the structures of the self are not yet fully there, like a young person. And then sometimes that works also. There's no general rule which says you always need to go through this. In the case of Ramana Maharshi, he was extremely young, hardly developed self. There was a self and that died, but not a very strongly established one. And he was only 16 or whatever it was. 15 maybe. But it can happen also that the unconditioned emerges and the form through which it emerges doesn't know what to do with it. It becomes totally dysfunctional, even to the point of appearing mad. And so there are people in India that have been called, when they wander around, I suppose, naked, and they look a bit mad, and sometimes they are called God intoxicated. And it is possible that has emerged, but through a form that isn't ready for it, one could say. In the West, they would be in a mental home. And here they are God intoxicated and they are free, which is preferable. Strange things are possible. It can also emerge before the egoic structures have dissolved. So they just give way, but they are still there. And then mistakes happen that you identify with the enormous power of presence and realization and say, that's me. The mind comes back in and claims some achievement. And this has happened even to teachers. And you can see it, they claim, I am he, the one, none other but me. And the teacher then, and this is very a strong pull to the ego in the follower, the claim of a teacher that I am the avatar of all ages. That is an enormous, what is being pulled, the ego responds to that very strongly, because by being close to the, you grow in your sense of self also. So always references to specialness, to me as the one. And also be careful when a teacher makes you special. And there's a question here about that. I seem to be answering the questions without looking at them. It says here, aren't you making people special by saying it's happening through you? This transformation of consciousness, isn't the ego going to come back in? And it could happen, yes. The ego can come back in and claim something. An improved image of yourself. One of those who have been chosen to be here. Then that feels better than the previous image. It replaces a more defective self-image. That's very subtle, can come in. But I don't see a lot of that happening here. I'm not looking into everybody's eyes, but... Really, what happens as you sit here, I'm never telling you that you are special. And this form certainly is not special. It's only because of that the teaching can happen. If this form thought itself as special, there would be no true spiritual teaching. So, you've been sitting here during these days feeling less and less special. A diminished sense of self, mind-made self. The possibility that in one or two of you the ego comes back through the back door, of course that's possible. But it's likely that you will notice it after a while. A sense of knowing it all, of little superiority, of just ask me. And you can witness that if it happens. Whenever you witness ego operating in yourself, that's great. You're witnessing it. And it operates in hundreds and hundreds of subtle ways. Just simply each little one designed to add a little bit to your sense of identity. And it operates even in the tiniest things like telling somebody what has happened. Do you know what's happened, the latest news? Do you know what he did? And the other person says for a moment, no. And at that moment, you are superior. It's very subtle. You feel a little bit bigger than the other person. And that is the great thing about gossip. Because the other person doesn't know yet, but you know. And you are telling. It's a very subtle movement. And when you can criticize somebody again, a very subtle sense of you are, of course, higher than the one who is being criticized or made fun of or gossiped about. Of course, the implication is that you are, and that's all that underlies ego, even to the absurd things like silly jokes that say, what is green and climbs up the wall? And then the person you're talking to says, I don't know. Ah, now let me tell you. I don't know. I can't tell you. So in hundreds of subtle ways, the ego tries to add something to itself. And when you're vigilant and present, you can watch that. We all know things like name dropping and all, but this is just, one could have a list, maybe in the next book I'll make a list of ego strategies, minor and major. Even things like somebody has just died in your vicinity and you get the news and you say, oh, that's dreadful. And if you look very deep inside, there's a little exhilaration, very subtle, which says, I am still alive. Not, I haven't died yet. I'm still alive. Oh. And you feel good for a moment because it wasn't you. It's very interesting to watch. Any kind of complaint in your head or verbal, unless it's something you're telling a person something to change something, a person who can do something about a situation, you're saying, please don't put this there, put that there. That's not complaint, but complaint just for the sake of complaint, which is part of everybody's normal egoic mind functioning, which goes on in people's self-talk and verbally in many people also, in addition to the self-talk in the head, complaining about whatever is going on now, a person, a place, a situation, a thing, fault-finding, looking for the one fault to complain about, and then focus on that, and then the ego gets strong in that. There's a beautiful carpet, but you're looking for the tiny stain there and say, oh, look at that. I've told that before. I don't know if you've heard. The last year I talked to my publisher, and he said he often gets letters about people writing in about how books that they've published have changed their lives. So he got one letter, and he read it. This book really changed my life, and it was great. And it went on and on, and on page 2 of the letter, it suddenly said, but then there was a serious spelling with typo, spelling error, misprint on page so-and-so, and that spoiled the whole pleasure of reading my book, that book. And really, if you show so little respect for the books you published, you shouldn't be in the business of publishing books. And you can see how the ego, how good it felt to the ego, whatever is bad to you feels good to the ego, how good it felt to the ego to be writing this, and how it got stronger and stronger, the self, in criticizing that. Now I know who I am. So subtle. And obvious at other times. So I've already answered a few questions. They just came in. Here's a big one. Your words are like my own heart talking to itself. Yes, there is this thread of eternity that is always present. This substratum of being out of which all states arise, waking, sleeping and dreaming. In India, this is called Turiya, the fourth. In your experience, how and why does Turiya arise out of the absolute unmanifest? So that question refers to the arising of, because I use different signposts from those, or of course it's all the same, the arising of the state of presence out of the unmanifested, which is connected with the whole reason why we are here and the universe is here. So this question is so big, what it's really asking is about the whole purpose of the universe. Why and how? Now, language consists of 5 vowels, A, E, I, O, U, these are sounds, plus the other ones, what are they called? Can't remember, consonants, and they are produced not through vocal cords, but through his air being under pressure, and being let out of ps, pr, sh, s, sh, whoo. Now, a combination of these 5 sounds produced by vocal cords, R, A, I, E, O, U, plus a few hissing sounds, how could I explain through that the entire purpose of the universe? One could give little stories, to a very distant approximations of it. Or you could have a philosophical system and think now you know it, but it would only be a combination of those sounds, vowels and diphthongs, in a certain sequence, hoping to capture the vastness of that in those little sounds. This is, you cannot understand through the mind the vastness of that. You can only be part of it as you are, knowing it directly, but not knowing it as a subject knows an object. It is impossible to know it through the mind in that way. How does it happen and why does it happen? One can give distant approximations. The world of the unmanifested God, Spirit, moving into matter. The whole universe becoming transformed into Spirit. Perhaps that's a distant approximation. But that would reduce it to something, a fragment. That's not it either. It's the illusion of knowledge that arises when the moment you speak and formulate words and concepts, and they're helpful as pointers. But so the vastness you cannot understand. You can't understand presence. I've said it before. Don't try to understand. You can understand a little bit about it through the mind, through formulating concepts. And I'd never talk about presence for you to understand what presence is, but simply using words to point to the state of presence. And then as presence arises, you know what presence is, but can you talk about it? It's very difficult. And whatever you say about it is limited and reduced. So very wisely, the Tao Te Ching says, the Tao that can be named or spoken of is not the true Tao. And the rest is simply little pointers. In that one statement, he has said that nothing that I say is the truth in itself. It only points. So it cannot really be spoken of, but self-realization is not that means, doesn't mean you know more about yourself or know more about anything. It's being one with that and understand it through being one with it. But then there may not be much that you can say about it. There is a knowing in that, but it goes beyond words. There is a deep knowing, but it is not, it cannot filter through the mind. It cannot, it's totally inadequate for that. So one could say you cannot know yourself at the deepest level. You can only be yourself. In being it, you know it, but not as a subject knows an object. And with that comes also there's a humility. And part of this is, you may remember, and it's vital, entering the state of not knowing, in which a deeper knowing resides. But it is the state of not knowing. I'm always happy when people come to me and say, I don't know who I am anymore. Oh, that's great. Because for a long time they thought they knew exactly who they were. They were not quite happy with it, but they knew who they were. And now they don't. And now the only step to take is to become comfortable with that, not knowing, and not feeling I should know. And of course with that comes a deep humility also. Not, I know, I don't know. When you say I don't know, you disappear. And the strange thing is that all these words come out of the not knowing state. And remember, that is the state that you are in when you walk along here and watch sense perceptions, listen, see all the different sense perceptions, and you don't interpret, you relinquish interpretation, and yet you know what you're looking at, and yet you don't know what you're looking at. It is not, no labels arise anymore, or if they do, they are recognized as mere labels, and then they subside, and there's again a space of not knowing. All the label is the illusion of knowing. Please.
It's very nice to see you. I heard about you many years ago, about 6 years ago. And it's very nice to be in your presence, and you are this. A number of years ago in Bihar, there was a prince, 2,546 years ago. And in his awakening, he knew how the whole of manifestation arose. And he said, Mara, I have seen how you build this house of samsara. I have broken your ridgepole. Never will you build this house again. In the words of the great sage Ramana Maharishi, he said there is a final truth. Nothing has ever existed. Nothing does exist. Nothing will ever exist. This is the ultimate finality. In awakening, there is an inherent wisdom that is beyond mind, as you say. There is a knowingness that is beingness, that is beyond doubt, beyond any deceit.
Yes.
All these great masters say the same thing. This is all illusion. It does not exist now, and it never did exist, and it will never exist. Is this your experience?
Yes. I'm not telling you that in those words, because they only become true for you as you realize that for yourself. If I told you that, half of you would go home. Is it, I only tell you what works as a pointer into that state. Certain realizations come out of that state by themselves that are deeply true, but do not work as pointers into that state so well. So there are some sages have uttered those words, and for a few isolated individuals, they may work as pointers. And perhaps they were talking to certain people when they realized could see the truth of those words, so they worked as pointers. But for most in the teaching that comes through this form, certain pointers are used and others are not used. There may be very deep truths that you will realize only through that inner knowing. And then it becomes true for you. So, yes, this is the truth, but I've never said it like that. And I may not say it again unless you ask me directly, in which case I would say yes. Yes. That's right. Now, it may well be that one day I may find myself with one person and those words will come out of my mouth, because there's never any prior intention before a word comes out of my mouth. And then that will work as perhaps the final pointer for that being. And those words suddenly will be true. Otherwise, if I said it, those words can easily be used by the mind and become a concept. And so, this is why the Buddha also said certain things and refrained from saying other things, because he realized how easily words are grasped by the mind and made into conceptual knowledge. So that is the beauty of teachings. They come in slightly different forms, and some statements you may find in some teachings and not in others. Buddha, as we all know, didn't speak of God wisely, because that is the greatest concept that the mind can grasp at and add to itself and create images out of and identify with. And of course it's been misunderstood, because Western intellectuals started studying Buddhism, professors at universities, and immediately, because they only saw those pointers, and they completely misunderstood and said, this is an atheistic religion and it is totally nihilistic. It is life-denying, they said. So they wrote PhDs about Buddhism. You could become a professor on Buddhism without knowing anything really about Buddhism. So that's how easily the mind can misinterpret. So, this is the truth. Whether in this form it will come out of my mouth again, I don't know.